This is To The Point. A Rhino Experience. Voted one of the top home services marketing and operations podcasts. Cutting through the bullshit and getting to the point.
Hey, what's up To The Point listeners? It's your boy, Chris. I got an exciting guest in here, which we've been trying to make it happen. We got a mutual buddy. Mutual buddies, I'm actually finding this out. And we live in the same damn place.
That's why I feel like we've like crossed paths so many times without crossing paths. And so finally when we met, I was like, we just randomly sat at the same table in Vegas. Like, what are the odds of that?
I know, dude. And then another one is you got the best detail in the game here in the state of Arizona, Mr. JD rolling up in here with you. That's awesome.
Dude, he's literally the man.
You have a mutual friend in Tommy, BB, you know, Jordan and Britt. And
I went golfing with Travis 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago in St. George.
Yeah. Okay. I did see those. He's not a bad golfer when he's on.
Yeah.
When he's on.
It was a good time, man. He was getting some, you know, he's getting razzled by some business partners and like that threw him off for a minute, but I appreciate it because I capitalized on it.
Good for you.
So,
feel free to bust his chops. Hey, Peterman, last time we played with Ringy, what course did we play? Wasn't that one Ishmael? It was me, you, Ishmael, Tommy, and Travis. Is that the one we were on? That was
Pine Canyon.
Yeah. It was like, that was the one. It was like in the city. Like it was like in a neighborhood. And that was when Tommy was so afraid of that old man because we were trying to play with five people. You remember that?
Yeah. That was a different one. That was actually the shitty course we played, but that was over by his place. That was like, he just forgot to book it and it booked like had rebooked like a shitty course and we went and played it. That's the one you're talking about.
Well, like you wouldn't ever take Tommy for like an absolute like rule follower. And he was like on it. I was like, it was a new side of him. I was like, I'm putting two and two together here. He's following the rules.
Well, I guess I should at least introduce our guest. You've heard him now. If you're watching, you can see us. But we got Cameron Bowden on here. We got Big Cam in the house today.
Let's go, man.
I've heard, you know what's cool is that as I started to look into your story a little bit early on, when Tommy's like, hey, did you get to meet my friend Cam at his party? I was like, no, I didn't. And he was like, I'm going to introduce you, but you know how that goes.
Right.
And then he was like, tell me about the company. I was like, the first time when he said about your, I don't know how involved, I don't think you're still, are you still involved with your manga?
Okay.
So, but that's, I knew the name. And the reason I knew the name is because I used to listen to John Jay and Rich.
Yep.
So here in Phoenix, that's what, 104.7, I think, right?
104.7? Yeah,
104.7. And I would hear the name coming up on there. And I think you end up like going to his house or something like that, which is how the whole thing started. Well, that had to be a game changer because I didn't know you think about the pest control companies. You got Burns right down the road from us, actually right up the road from us.
Right.
Who's kind of been a player in here a long time from what I know. He's been on the podcast before. It was probably like 2020, 2021.
Okay.
But when I said the name, I was like, I totally recognize the name. Actually, I was telling Petra, who's at our front desk. I was like, hey, when you're coming, I was like, hey, let me know. And she's like, why does that name sound familiar? I'm like, Green Mango. She was like, oh, I know Green Mango from John Jay and Rich. I was like, there you go. So I actually have that in here because I want to talk about that when you get to it. But you got like a whole little story here. And so I've heard the stuff from Tommy. I've listened to a couple of episodes and I was preparing for this. And I was like, cool, you have a lot of stuff that we can tap into. And the hope is, you know, the majority of all these listeners are all home services, home improvements guys, you know, just trying to like figure shit out.
Cool.
And, you know, and
what's the average revenue? Do you know?
I mean, listen, because we have big players come on here too. We're the lucky type of podcast that gets the big players who are listening for like the guys or, you know, like Chad is, you know, well into the hundreds. Our friend Aaron's well into the hundreds, or I guess he's just at 100, but we have a lot of the bigger companies that come on, which if you're, you know, the 1, 3, 5, 10, hard to learn from some of the bigger players. So we try to bring on the median, you know, like other players who are, can still learn from you. If you're a $20 million or $30 million businesses, like we kind of fit in that little, I would say the majority of these people listening are probably what, Chad, do you think like 10 million and below? Cause that's just the majority anyhow.
Cool. I'd say so.
Yeah.
Just helps with when we're framing things and talking about
it. I get it. So. Yeah. But we kind of have all shapes and sizes. There's private equity listens to this. So hi to all our PE people that are listening right now. They'll send it out to their different brands, you know, and stuff like that. So it's for some perspective, but it's all home services, home improvements, you know, roofing, shit like that. So right in your wheelhouse, dude.
Yep. We're home.
So, you know, some of the headlines I read when I read about you is, I want to talk about the 1% club too, but before I get to that, I just want to talk about like when I was started doing a little research, you know, the thing I hear about is you sold to five companies for 100 million plus or something along those lines. And I started to look through some of the different companies and things like that. But it seems like the flagship brand was Green Mango. That was kind of the flagship company, which is pest control. Not easy to get into. From in my world, I avoid it. Like from a marketing perspective, I avoid it. And maybe you're going to tell me I'm wrong, and that's okay.
Yeah,
I've avoided it because typically my customer type is always like HVAC, big average ticket, roofing, big average ticket. You know, if you get into plumbing, get into some sewer line repair, big average ticket. It's kind of my thing.
Right.
Versus the low barrier of entry, you know, monthly, you know, retain, you know, recurring revenue costs. Yeah. Like it takes a minute for those, for somebody to like see, to be able to afford it, to be competitive. And so I've just, now I'm like, listen, the path of least resistance for me is to go with the bigger average ticket. And it's worked out well for us.
Yeah.
You know, sure over all these years, we're all, you know, 18-year-old business now. But I want to talk about like your experience too, because I'm interested, you know, you figured something out and then you applied it across multiple businesses is what I'm assuming has happened to have, you know, to be able to scale and sell these things.
Yeah.
So, but I want to tell you something. Here's a theory I got. Chad, we've talked about this before. So I was able to buy into a company here, earlier this year called Prolific Brand Design, one of our sponsors. And they do branding and things like that. Well, there was a guy who was up in just north of Salt Lake who I had been, you know, who wanted to come and work for us at Rhino for a while. And I was like, wait a second, I'm thinking about buying this company. He owned like a little small email marketing business. Mm-hmm. And his name is Zach Garside. And so I was like, I got a theory, Zach, and because Zach's LDS. I was like, I bet you can sell. Like, tell me your story, Zach.
Right.
Because, you know, and we have quite a few friends who are LDS and it's the same thing. This theory is you guys are good at selling because you kind of get put like right out the gate. Cause when you did your mission, where'd you go?
I went to Canada, Edmonton.
Okay. That's not even like as cool. All right. So there's,
I agree.
But you have to kind of go and sell religion.
Yeah.
You know, and that is no easy task to do. So, but, and you're probably, is it you're 19. Yep. So that to me, like you are learning early on how to overcome adversity. You got to have some thick skin. That is no easy task. Like you're going to be uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You're going to get a lot of people who slam doors in your face, say, no, thank you. No, thank you. No, thank you. Until you finally get somebody who listens. That to me is like what a professional salesperson, like if you can work through that, you can be really successful. And if you got like a really good, you know, personality and stuff on top of it, like you kind of got a well-rounded sales beast.
Right. I agree.
So you had a one up on everybody right out the gate too, for most people. So, that's my theory, by the way, on LDS. I'm like, hey, listen, you have somebody who's been in that world. I bet you they're going to be great at sales.
Yeah.
So, seems like that maybe that worked out for you.
What's interesting about that, or about me specifically, is that, you know, I just did a podcast with my dad yesterday. We were talking about mindset and my life coach. And we talked about how from an early stage, I was very shy and I couldn't even look at people in the eyes when I'd communicate with them, much like a lot of high schoolers, right? Just low self-confidence, just kind of like slur of the words, all the things. The mission, selling religion and selling pest control or alarms or solar, it's completely different, but you're right. Like there's stepping stones that you have to go through. And one of those stepping stones is the fear of rejection. And so when you knock on someone's door and you're talking to them about religion, that's a pretty hard product to sell, right? But you learn how to persevere. You learn how to work hard. You learn how to manage your area, if you will. And that's what door knocking is. And so when I got home from my mission and I got recruited, like most missionaries do, it was a great foundation. But even then, I didn't have the confidence to go out and sell. And that's when mentors, my business partner, who actually started Green Mango with, I just shadowed him for like a year. And I went from like, you know, barely being able to knock on a door to sell pest control to one of our, you know, I was their top salesman forever. I led from the front, but I had to become a different person. I had to be, and what I mean by that is like naturally, and I think you've picked up on the vibes already, like I'm a pretty chill, relaxed guy. When I'm on the doors, like there's a flip that switch where it's not fake, but I know that my tones have to change. I know that my energy has to change. I know that I have to be a little bit more spontaneous or a little bit more, you know, just in that customer's face, because they don't want a monotone guy at the door trying to sell pest control. You know what I mean? And totally. So what's important though, and this is what entrepreneurship is all about, is understanding what are the different levels of where I want to go. And basically like, what are the things that I need to do in order to get there? And it's just chopping at those little things. And so for me, the mission was a platform because I was so behind of communication, of confidence, all those things. And I had 2 years to figure that out. And then when I got back, I was able to learn sales within 6 months because like I had that platform built.
So makes total sense. And it's not for everybody.
No,
no matter how hard you try or practice, it's not for everybody. But maybe what we can do then is for the listeners is I kind of ran through really fast. I said, hey, you know, you had five businesses sold for $100 million. Maybe just a Cliff Notes version of kind of that history there. So of in the businesses, cause you had, you had the auto glass, is it Agave auto glass? Yep. You had Black Hat Security. I can't remember them all, but maybe just Cliff Notes version, kind of walk the listeners through.
Yeah, so 2009, I got home from my mission and originally I wanted to do real estate. In 2009, the market was trash and I just got recruited into work for pest control. Moxie, my buddy worked at Moxie, yeah. And he's like, hey, why don't you come see what this is like? And so I recruited with him and that was the first time where I understood this term like residual income. I was like, that sounds cool. You know, and there's actually money in pest control. Like I just thought like I'd see the guys come spray my house and they were nasty, you know, overweight guys with beards. It's like, dude, I don't want to be a pest control guy, you know? And, so he talked me into starting Green Mango. We started in 2010, didn't take any money from the company until 2016. From 2016 to 2018, I thought I was the best guy. Like I thought I was untouchable. I'm making, you know, $1 million a year. Like I think, and I'm cool. Like all the things. We started five other service companies in 18 months. We started Black Hat Security, Pineapple Pools, Agave Auto Glass, Phoenix Power, which is a solar company. And then Coconut,
were you married or in a relationship or kids or anything like that?
Yeah. Time? So I started Green Mango in November and I got married a month after in December.
Okay.
So, which is a whole nother, like we could go down that rabbit hole, but 2018, you know, started all these companies, 2019 lost my big investor, was $4 million in debt, felt like my life was over and then crawled out and sold in 2025. So it's like, jeez. That's the Cliff Note version. Jesus. We can go down whatever hole you want to go in.
That was a hell of a jump from your investor. So I did hear that on one of your podcast episodes that you did that you, when you're talking about that investor came out and like where it puts you at, like you really had a fight. You really had to fight through that whole moment and not give up when you're kind of like, dude, what do you do? Like, how do I not give up?
In home services, speed to lead is everything. Chirp stands out by transforming your communication strategy. With Chirp, accelerate your lead response time with instant SMS text messaging, email, and ringless voicemail automation. Chirp's cutting-edge technology ensures you're the first and the most persistent, helping you close more deals than ever. But that's not all. Say goodbye to missed opportunities with Chirp's incredible follow-up system. Keep your leads engaged and moving smoothly through your sales funnel without lifting a finger. And with Chirp deep integrations with top CRMs like ServiceTitan, HouseCall Pro, and Jobber, you can launch laser-targeted campaigns to connect with the exact right leads at the exact right time. Automation creates efficiency. Efficiency unlocks scalability. With Chirp, you can automate speed to lead, estimate follow-ups, rehash, abandoned call follow-ups, canceled job follow-ups, review requests, outbounding to your list, annual reminders, membership expiration follow-ups, and so much more. So stop chasing leads, capture them. Connect faster and close more deals with Chirp. Contact Chirp today and elevate your communication game.
Yeah, it was like this weird emotion of feeling like I figured out business and like this investor gave me a lot of validation that like, hey, I'm behind you because of what you've built to like, hey, you're not good enough for me. And like that hurt. And we put a lot of energy into those five companies. Like when I say energy, it's not just like my time and effort. It's like this guy has a family and he's relying on me for a paycheck. I don't have the money to keep funding these businesses. I got to figure out which ones are the winners, which ones are the losers, which one takes up the most time. And so like we fire sold a lot of companies and we did well on them. On a lot of them was paid off debt. Some of them we did well. Some of them were just, you know, whatever. And that's the beautiful thing about service companies is there always is an exit as long as you're running it correctly to where there's always a buyer. There's always someone like you wanting to come in, buy it, you know, and then go triple it up.
Yeah. Yeah. Got it. Okay. I still feel like there's a lot to unpack there because I'd be curious, like nobody in their right mind goes out and starts five separate companies, you know, simultaneously, at least nobody that I know of who I guess besides you, Cam. Investing different, starting and actually getting in and run like day to day. I don't even know how you do this job takes most of my time and we have investments. You know, Chad and I have, you know, a company together. We've invested in other companies, but we're not running the decent day to day.
Right.
You only have so much, you know, focus you can give, you know, during so many hours within a day to a business, like thoughtful stuff. Yeah. But you kind of blew through something real quick. It sounded like you said, if I got my math right, you went through about 6 years of just making like you weren't taking money. Right. And then you said, finally you started making a little bit of money. 6 years. In that 6 year stint, like now that you know what you know, was there something you could have done differently to where you weren't still like, it took me in this business too, like at Rhino, a lot of time before I started actually paying myself money. I kept pumping everything right back into the business, probably somewhere in that same stint, 6-7 years, maybe a little bit longer. I could have done it differently and I wouldn't have had to put myself through that today. I know how to do it.
Right.
But like, what did you learn from that moment that you would do differently? Guarantee there's people listening right now who are like, I don't know how I get into that space because it seems so far away.
Well, this is why I'm so passionate about mentorship is because like those people can give you the lessons without the scars and you don't have to go 6 years. And so when I think back on like why we didn't make money is because I was going through my education period. Like there was times the first 2 years of Green Mango, we were running all the customers on an Excel spreadsheet. Like you laugh because you know what, like the nightmare that could be. So we were like forgetting to bill our customers. Right? Like you can't run a business if you're not billing your customers.
Oops.
Or like routing efficiencies. Like you have your service companies understand how important route value is on a daily basis. Like I know now on a service company, if you're not making a minimum of $1,400 per route on like our tickets, it's almost impossible to scale a business. We are running $700 route values, $600, $650, like those two changes alone. And so if I would have had a mentor literally sit down with me and spend 3 hours with me and teach me that, like we probably could have made money within the first 2 years. Cause it was less about like, oh, we're putting all this money into growth. Instead of making $200,000 a year, we're going to put it into next year's growth. It wasn't that. It was like, we're making payroll, like barely surviving here.
Got it.
So, yeah. So Cam, one question I have for you, because you did go so fast and, you know, just kind of, hey, we're going to figure this out on the fly. What do you think? I mean, I guess looking back, you know, I think looking back, we'd all say, oh, well, I wouldn't have done this and I would have done this and so on and so forth. But in the moment, you're just trying to survive and trying to, you know, grow something that you believe in. What do you feel like was some of the bigger lessons you learned from just going fast? I think so many entrepreneurs are, you either get the ones that are like so fast, they're out of control, or you get the ones that are like paralysis by analysis, like just won't make a move. How do you think you kind of harness that energy to create what you did?
I think when you move fast, you can see like what you're truly capable of. I think that's one of the most powerful things because that is a problem that I see a lot of entrepreneurs make is like, oh, I'm going to push this off until Q3 when we have the time, when we have the bandwidth, when we have the energy. Like, you know, when you start five companies and you have to do all the marketing, all the operations, all the systems, all the, you know, like all the finance, everything, like it literally like your ceiling rises 20%, like 200%. Right. And so that's the point. I think that's what gave me so much hope is like everything became easy after that. Hey, like this isn't a big deal. Like handling these two companies' problems today, like this is a cakewalk. You know, we used to handle five different companies. And so this is kind of messed up to say, but I found a lot of joy. My CFO came to me one time and I think it was his grandma that passed away. And he's like, usually this would have wrecked me, but because I've been through what I've been through with you, like I was able to like go through this with no problems. And I was like, dang, that's kind of messed up. But at the same time, it's like, we laugh at some of the entrepreneurs, like quote unquote problems that they have because they're small problems to us. Cause we've been through so much. And I think that's one of the greatest values that I had and why, like when I look back on my journey, the worst financial decision I made was to start those five companies, but it was also the best decision because I learned so much of who I am and what I'm capable of because we had to move fast.
Yeah. Well, you got no choice. You're trying to, you have human beings that are depending on you. So you got to move. It's like, this is what my wife really hates.
Which your wife's awesome, man. She's a freaking boss.
It's the only reason that we're here because I'm a jump, you know, and build the parachute on the way down type of guy. And she is not that way, but you need those kind of people.
Yeah.
Right. To push the envelope a little bit. It's just better if you have the people, if you can like jump with the people who actually know how to build the parachute really, really fast.
Right.
So now you mentioned this, you know, you're wearing lots of hats, but you can't, unless you're a unicorn, and maybe you are a unicorn, Cam, but you can't be good at everything. Like you're talking sales, marketing, operations, like you can't be good at all these things, but you must have found like, you know, in regards to like good business principles, you must have found like two or three. They're like, okay, these are at least the two or three things that I know are applicable that I'm good at doing across these businesses.
Right.
What is that for you? Like what are those things to you?
Well, first of all, I think what's important is that when people think about scaling, like people always talk about Elon Musk. Oh, Elon Musk can go do these three companies and make them what they are. Well, it's because he can afford A players. Yeah. And an A player is a owner, like is a boss. He is you, right? You give him the direction, you give him the vision and the resources, he's going to go execute. A B player and a C player, which is where, you know, we have to play a lot of the times, especially in the, you know, home service industry, with no capital to go hire a $250,000, $450,000 base salary employee, we just can't do it. And so we're babysitting a lot and we're doing all that, right? One of the things that I did correctly was that in each business that we started, I would have what I call an owner operator partner. So they understood the industry perfectly. We brought the sales, we brought the we brought the operations, we brought the finance to the game, but he was the one dealing with the everyday headache that you and I know what it's like, right? So that is one thing that I did. One of my strengths, your question is, I feel like I'm really good at systems and processes, understanding like, hey, if my phone's getting blown up, you know, I get 200 text messages a day, like what is the underlying theme that people are asking me? Cool, let me go create a system for this. Let me go create a process and a training for them to do it so that my phone doesn't blow up in a month from now, 200 times.
Yep.
And that's what I feel like I'm really great at. And that's what, you know, because with the 1% Club, I'm coaching a lot of businesses in the same realm, it sounds like, as your audience. And that is that like people are stuck working in the business. And it sounds so cliche, but instead of working on the business, but if you can just take a moment. And again, like I said, if someone would have taught me about the importance of route value per truck, like that probably could have helped me become profitable years and years before I actually did. And so that's like, that's what you can do.
Yeah. He's a systems and process guy.
Yeah. One question I have for you, just because I know I get this question a lot because I'm in a family business and I work with my brother. Obviously, you said, hey, I picked a partner that was kind of an owner operator. So my partner in that business, what were some of the qualities that you looked for? And those could be like, you know, I always say that me and my brother work because we enjoy two different parts of the business. He enjoys his part. I enjoy my part. We stay out of each other's way for the most part. And that's why it works rather than us stepping on each other's toes and, you know, second guessing each other and all of that stuff. What was your kind of process for selecting that owner operator? Because I think it could benefit a lot of listeners that are, you know, maybe dealing with partnerships or family business or what have you.
Yeah. I mean, picking a partnership is no different than trying to interview an employee to know if they're the right person for that position. And so it's difficult, right? But when we were thinking about partners, the first thing that we look for is like, do they understand the industry? So if I take Coconut for an example, it's a carpet and tile cleaning company. We wanted to make sure that we had the expert there. So we went and headhunted a guy that worked for us the first year at Green Mango as a door knocker. He ran Zero Res, which is a competitor here. And we went and poached him. And so his name's Evan. And he's been the greatest partner ever because he not only did he understand the business of carpet, but he was a great people person. So if I would have gone back, when people come to me and say, hey, who should I partner with? I think you should partner with what you're saying as someone that's completely opposite of who you are. If you're looking for someone that brings the same traits, you're just looking for someone to be in the trenches with you. You don't need that. And you're probably going to have a breakup. But for me, I said, I'm a systems and operations guy. The guy that I started Green Mango with, he was the marketing guy. He's a very creative, very talented at brand. He's the one that created all the brands. He's the one that created the touch and the feel for the customer. That's not me. There's a huge need for that. And it's something that, like, I don't think you could outsource or hire. Like, obviously there's agencies out there like you guys that can do it. But like, I had so much value in that. And that was worth me giving up 50% of my company to, because he nailed it on the brand. Like, we talk about people know me as Green Mango. It's like, it's because we had an amazing brand. We, at least in Arizona, like, we've changed the game with how people wrap their trucks, with how people talk about premium, with how people name their companies. It's so funny to see all these different, I was walking in the gym today. It's like Blue Lemon. I don't even know what that is, but it's on a cyber truck, you know? And I asked my buddy, I'm like, what's Blue Lemon? He's like, he literally named it after Green Mango, because he's like, you see what Green Mango did? Like,
I'm going to name it Blue Lemon. Green Mango.
Yeah. that's what I'd say is, you know, partner with someone that compliments you where you're weak. Yeah. That's what you need.
I mean, that's what made Anna and I work, is we are polar opposites of one another. So like, our strengths complement each other. So it did work that way. And just thank God my partner is my real life partner.
Yeah.
Too. Right. So that worked out good for me. Well, and I want to touch on a few things, because a lot of the businesses that you talk about, Green Mango, Coconut, Agave, Black Hat, all of them, like, these were all businesses that you can have similar marketing tactics to, where you can go and do canvassing. You can go and canvas and knock doors, roofing. There's a lot of that in roofing as well. But at some point in time, I hear you on, you know, John Jay and Rich, which means you made a pivot somewhere in there, and you must have had to start to do some like traditional style marketing or whatever else besides door knocking. So maybe what you can do is, okay, so that's what it was. So I think it was, you said 16 and 17, you transitioned from the door knocking efforts into traditional marketing.
Yeah.
And that's when you really start to see things take off. So my question is, what did you do? And then what gave you the confidence to do it?
Yeah. So those of you guys that know or don't know about the door to door world, is like, it's a grind, man. You have 18 to 25 year olds that are just high maintenance guys. And I can say that because I was one of them, right? It's like, they just want to make a ton of money and do the least amount of work. And just like any salesman, they're going to go to the door and promise the world to the customer. And let's face it, like, that's not the customer that you really want. Someone that was like forced into or talked into buying and promised the world. But that was we didn't know anything else. Like, that was our model. And so 2015, 2016, because Dusty and I weren't smart enough to delegate and hire managers or A players, like, we were wearing every single hat. We were the billing manager, we were the office manager, we were the tech manager, we were the sales manager. And with these organizations, like, it's a full-time job just to be a sales manager. And so, you know, every single year, like, our retention of these door-to-door guys was like really low. Half our team would go get recruited by some other team, because it's a really shiesty industry too. So every summer, or after every summer, like, we'd have, let's say, 20 guys, 10 of them would leave and go to other competitors. And then it's like, you got to wine and dine them. And so we just weren't that great at it. And I say not that great at it. I don't think we had the time. Like, we were so busy doing other things that, like, it needs its own individual. Right. But nonetheless, like, it was a pain point. We hated doing it. We hated wining and dining. We didn't have the time, all the things. Well, we were looking into traditional marketing, and we had this buddy who was advertising with John Jay and Rich, and we were talking to them. He owned a marketing company, and he was giving us all these ideas. Hey, do this, do that, whatever. One day he called us and he's like, hey, John Jay just called, and he's got ants at his house. Like, his bug guy told him he'd be out there in 2 days. Like, I don't care what you guys are doing. It was like 4 o'clock. He's like, you need to go out there right now. Dusty went out there and just did it. Like, of course he probably turned on the sparkle, but like, nonetheless, like, it was our service. And that's one of the things that we prided ourselves on. Like, we were Arizona's finest premium service. And like, we backed it up. We had the longest service time. We would put down more product than anyone else. We were very detailed, and we did that. And the next day, John Jay goes on the radio station, and these are the spots that you can't buy. It's just them organically talking about what they do in life. And he riffs for like 5 or 10 minutes about Green Mango and this Dusty character. And our phones like blew up. We sold like 20 accounts in a day, which for us, we'd need a team of like 15 dudes to sell 20 accounts in one day. And that was like a really good day for us. All of a sudden, these guys are calling us and signing up, and they're like lay down sell. They're not even a sell. Like, it's an order take, right? And we were just like, what the heck, dude? What is this? You know? And so that was our like beginning to like, hey, let's dump the door-to-door model and like let's go all in on traditional marketing because it's so much nicer to close an account that's wanting our service as opposed to talking them into it.
You got lucky because you got like a this is rare. You got like, that's what it's like to do some radio advertising without spending any money on radio advertising. Right. You got like a little sneak peek at it.
It was crazy. But again, like it took risk, right? So the contract was around 20 grand a month. We didn't have that. But we just knew, wow, like something works here. And so I remember doing the math, you know, and we weren't that great at math, but we're like, if we sell, you know, whatever it was, 7 accounts a day, we should be able to afford this, you know, we
got to break even.
Yeah, exactly. And I'll never forget like that first day that the radio turned on when we signed that contract, I didn't close, like someone called me and I was in the car with Dusty and I didn't close it. And he just reamed me out for not closing it. I'm like, bro, I tried, man. We're not going to have 100% close rate on every single lead. So it's funny.
So you're talking, was it like a $250,000, you know, annual budget and yep. You're like just letting it rip. So really you had no. Like if you didn't hit your 7 number, you're kind of just like, I'm going to figure out how to, you
know, I mean, we're rob screwed.
Peter to like, PayPal. Okay.
Yeah, there was that, but we were still like, we knocked doors every single day for probably six to seven years, literally Monday through Saturday, knowing that, hey, every single day I got to go put on 4 to 5 accounts, like minimum in order to like keep paying for this thing. So we would do that on top of the John Jay and Rich stuff.
Did you notice? Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Chad.
Oh, I was just going to say, so it sounds like when you're, and correct me if I'm wrong, but like when you're door knocking, you're potentially not selling like the most premium service. It's more so like, hey, how can I sign? You may be promising them stuff, but it's like, hey, how can I sign this account? But it sounds like when you went to like the traditional marketing, it was like, hey, we're going to market kind of this premium service. I guess I asked the question because I feel like so many contractors kind of deal with this. It's like, it's either like a race to the bottom and like, I'm going to offer like the cheapest tune-up out there, or I'm going to advertise a tune-up that is, you know, far and away the most expensive, but I'm going to provide all this value behind it. I guess kind of was there a shift in that, or how did you grapple with, hey, this is the type of service and the type of customer we're looking for versus we want to sign as many accounts. And if we got to, you know, discount the hell out of this, then we will just assign it. How did you kind of think through that?
Yeah. So there's no change in the service, and like, that was maybe our problem, but like we did the same service no matter what. It was the type of customer that we are going after. And so when the door-to-door world, especially in pest control, is pretty shysty. Like you go in, that's the beautiful thing about Arizona. Everyone has a company. So you're not introducing a new product, you're switching them over. And so our pitch would be, hey, switch over and upgrade to our service. And we'd sell them on what we're doing. And a lot of times the conversation would go, well, our guy does that. And naturally as a salesman, it's like, well, we're going to do it better. And then they overpromise, and then it's just failed expectations. Whereas on the phone, if they hear John, like this is the power of influencer marketing. And this is why it's just so amazing, right? It's like, if John Jay says, and John Jay Rich say that like it's amazing, then people just naturally say, oh, my company sucks, I'm going with them. And so when people call in, they're like, hey, we want to sign up. I would have to tell my salesman, hey, I need you to talk about TriBlock Technology, which is our service, just so that they know, like, we do what we do. People wouldn't even care about anything after that. We didn't have to overcome objections of, yeah, like my company does this, do you guys do that? No, like that just doesn't happen. And that's why, like, outside of John Jay and Rich, like we launched the influencer marketing program. We had amazing referral programs, but our service always stayed the same. But the influencer marketing like changed the game for us. And we like jumped on it early on. I mean, we're talking about 2016 here. Instagram's barely coming out. Like influencers are just like, we were just able to ride that roller coaster. So
nice. Hey, Chad. So
yeah,
I'm trying to think, like trying to give you a comparison. I would say they're, it's probably like Q95. It's the same thing there. Like it's that big of a station. Like John Jay and Rich were like they were like the, that's who I listened to.
Is it three guys or two?
It's just
John Jay.
John Jay is one person. Yep.
John Jay is one person. All right. I'm getting the lingo down.
Okay. I got you. So when you're with any of your radio spots, Chad, were they like, were they pre-recorded commercials, or was it the actual like DJs themselves who were saying, oh, we use Peterman Brothers and blah, blah, blah. Like what, or have you done a mixture of both those things?
We've done a mixture of both. We had a spot with, we did more like on like sports talk. And then I feel like it got like oversaturated where every other commercial was a heating and cooling company. So we kind of shifted and we mix them up now, but most of ours are pre-recorded. But I just wrote down influencer marketing because weirdly enough, we were on a call this morning and we were talking about that.
Yes, we need some influencer marketing. Micro influencer marketing.
Yeah.
Yeah. And not us. So we need like, not us. the reason I asked that question is because you hear both, like both versions of it. And I think, when I hear it now, it's like, okay, do you really use that company that you're saying, Mr. DJ or Mrs. DJ, you know what I mean? But there's still clearly a bunch of people that do, right? And like you said, you become an order taker for it, which is pretty cool, but it comes, you know, at a cost, and that takes some nerve to want to spend that money. I will say, I think that, in today's world, like with OTT, I've been talking about this more and more. I'm really intrigued by it. I have a partnership with, this company called Mountain. You ever heard of this company before, Chad, called Mountain? You're not going to know because Lindy handles it for you, but, it's basically you can bypass the trade desk, which is how you can go and purchase media for like, streaming video and things like that. Ryan Reynolds owns it, ironically, you know, the comedian Ryan Reynolds. It's a pretty cool little platform though, where you can run specific ads to a specific zip code with a specific video and you can track it all. So it's all measurable, which is pretty cool. So, and you only have to pay for it if they watch the full, like past the skip it part, you know? So like there's something to it. And, we ran it for our roofing business, like right out the gate, just to try and build brand equity. So we did it in a little small area, you know, try to become like 5 Mile Famous. And it did great for our brand. And because we started, you know, people were reaching out to us and we got better talent option because we looked bigger, you know? and so it was a risk, you know, and if we didn't have the capital, maybe we wouldn't have done it, you know, but it made me a fan. And I've seen it happen, you know, for our clients in here at Rhino. I'm like, okay, like I'm becoming more and more and more of a believer of it, you know, on what you do, but the content matters for it. So you have a couple new tools around these days, you know, in case you want to get into the business again.
I think radio's tough now, man. It's
yeah. I wake up here, you know, and if for some reason the TV's on, you know, because Anna left it on for some reason, I see Tommy's face on the TV or I see Ken talking on the TV still because they brought his commercials back here in Phoenix. And then I got a text message from Tommy and you can't get away from Tommy. Dude does a good job of marketing. Okay. I'm going to shift gears from it. I originally was going to talk about, you know, how do you create, you know, some demand in a market that's saturated, but, I actually am going to shift gears cause I want to talk about, you talk about the green mango and it being a unique name. I remember your trucks too. They were like that flat black look. There was like a flat, was like a black or a flat black looking. Was it a wrap? Is that what it was? It was a, but it looked black with the green.
We started wrapping it, but we ended up painting them. But yeah, it's flat black.
Flat black, which is a pain in the ass to keep clean. I don't know how great of a decision that was. If you're painting them, at least the wraps are easier to keep clean. But there's a role that storytelling played in that. And Goodrich talks about the brand story all the time about Gettle and him holding the flashlight for his dad. But you know, I know you weren't the marketing guy, but like how important was the storytelling piece in the presentation of the business? Is it like, because we don't, maybe start with why you even chose green mango. Right. Cause that's going to be part of the story. But then just like how influential was that in like, hey, this is part of our sales processes. You talk about the story of this business.
If you've been listening to this show, you'll know that I only talk about tools that actually help our team. And BlueOn is definitely one of those. At Peterman Brothers, our techs are using BlueOn every single day. It's become their go-to resource. It really is like having a senior tech in your pocket. They can scan a unit, get all the model data, wiring diagrams, parts, and even troubleshoot with BlueOn's AI. We've seen fewer callbacks, faster fixes, and happier techs. And that's why I'm such a big believer in Bluon, because it actually works. So do yourself a favor, click on the link in the description and book a quick demo with the Bluon team to see it in action.
Attention to the point listeners, branding has never been more important. Is your brand in serious need of an upgrade? Do you have a new company and need a new brand but don't want to wait 6 months or pay a ridiculous amount to get it done? If your brand looks like everyone else's, well, guess what? You are everyone else. But Prolific, they build brands that dominate. From the first Google search to the driveway, Prolific brand design can help you be more of you, because you are the unique difference that sets you apart from all your competitors. So let's be real for a second. Your brand is either winning you customers or costing you money. Just ask some of our clients like Ken Goodrich, Ishmael Valdez, my boy Chad Peterman, and even myself. Prolific brand design is the creative pros behind some of the best home services logos, truck wraps, websites, and now email marketing campaigns. Wouldn't you love it if your email marketing open rates were 30, 40, 50% and don't go into the spam folder hell? That's how we roll at Prolific. So check them out at prolificbranddesign.com and ask for the To The Point promo, Prolific Brand Design. Be more of you. Be prolific.
So the story wasn't as important to us as Ken does, if we're kind of comparing it to that. But what was important is the full experience that the customer got. And so we kind of coined this term in our industry with our people of premium. And so what does premium mean? Premium means from top to bottom. And so when we first started, the industry was the Burns guy in an old van, you know, that would leave an oil stain in your driveway. He was overweight with a beard. Like that's what, who was showing up to your house in the old, like Carhartt type of uniform and just kind of nasty, you know? And so what did we do? Like we went out and we spent a lot of money on brand new trucks. We were one of the first companies, if not, you know, the first one that I saw that really like spent the money on wheels, right? Most people will do a wrap. No one's putting 22 inch rims on a tire or on a service vehicle. Right. And a lot of people made fun of us. Like what is Green Mango? What is it? Like, what are these guys trying to do? You know, but we wanted this keeping up with the Joneses mentality, because our target demographic was kind of the middle to higher end income people. Yeah. Like we'll take the lower income, but like we're trying to appease to people that have, disposable income. And so people care about keeping up with the Joneses with that. Right. Yeah. And so would you want like this old nasty, and I hate to say Burns, but I say Burns because they're the biggest company, sure. Right? But like, do you want this nasty van showing up, or do you want like a fresh flat black Silverado on 22s showing up to your house? Like, what is that? Who does that say you are? Right. And so we created this keeping up with the Joneses mentality. And then it's okay, what is the technician wearing? We were very strict about Nike. The Nike, and it wasn't just like any type of Nikes. They had to be a certain colorway. They had to be a certain, you know, boot. If they wanted boots, like here's the Nike boot that was approved. If you wore sleeves, like they were Nike sleeves, the collared shirts, the hats, you just, we had a front door hat. We had a technician hat, you know, when they're spraying, like they get all the sweat in their hat. Like don't wear that to the front door. Our marketing material. People thought we were crazy because did you ever have our service?
Nope.
Suck, man. I'm just kidding. But like, if you did,
you come up to Anthem.
We did. If you saw our folder, you would think like, wow, these guys just spent $20 on all this marketing material. But it was like a full presentation of who we are, because part of our program is like, we wanted to basically like convince you that we were the best. And we did that through our marketing, so that when someone came to the door, they couldn't say, hey, Green Mango doesn't power spray. Green Mango doesn't do this. Green Mango doesn't do that. It's like, no, I see that every single time because of the literature. When they call in, how is our people greeting the customer? We adopted the Chick-fil-A model.
Yeah.
Hey, thank you for calling Arizona's finest premium service. We wanted to put that into people's minds. So every single touch point was like, we are premium. We are the best. It's a pleasure speaking with you today. How may I assist you? Things like that. Like it's the little touch points all the way that make a difference to the consumer, to where it's like, this is just a premium experience. And that's where I feel like a lot of companies fall short, is that like, now I see, it's funny. It's like people will go spend a ton of money on the wraps or the paint jobs on their trucks, and then they still have like the stock tires. And it's like, okay, like you went all this way, but if you put tires, rims and tires on that truck, like it'll change the appearance. Cool. Their technician's still showing up and like they haven't come up with a brand guide. You know more than anyone how important a brand guide is.
Yep.
go make that brand guide. So a guy, like, is it a quarter inch beard that they're allowed to have? Are they allowed to wear any, like in the wintertime, are they allowed to wear any sweatshirt that they want? Are you providing them a sweatshirt? Like, just like, you need to pay attention to all the little touch points. And that's what we did. Like, we are crazy about it. And I think that's why we were able to have market dominance in Arizona with our brand and who we were, to where people were like, dude, they're literally the best. I've had so many companies come in here and say, look, like, we literally shut down shop. Anytime we go to a door, it got to a point where when people would knock on a Green Mango customer's door, they would just turn around and walk away because they knew they couldn't switch our guys over. And it's like, I love hearing that, because they can't lie to us. They can't deny that we're not the best. Like, it's just, it was there.
I want one question I have for you, because I think it's important. We were actually talking about it this morning, is I think in contracting businesses, the prevailing thought is finding technicians is hard. You know, we're going to put up with bad behavior and bad habits and so on and so forth, because finding another one is just so difficult. What kind of transformation did you see when, to your point, I mean, you were basically just maniacal about the brand and this is what it is and this is what we stand for and we won't accept anything less? Like, that level of accountability, I think, scares a lot of contractors and entrepreneurs, because it's like, well, am I going to run off my people? I guess from your perspective, what was that change that you saw when holding everybody accountable to that? Like, what change did you see in your people? Like, maybe someone who came in, maybe a little bit, you know, he wasn't really following it, but you just held him accountable every single day. Like, what kind of change in, you know, just overall performance and what they did? What did you see there?
So it all comes down to the leader. It starts with you, and then it's whoever's over that direct report. So I call it the Tom Brady, the Bill Belichick way, right? If you went and played for Tom Brady and Bill Belichick at the Patriots, like, you're not coming in as a piece of crap and you're not slacking. Like, they're going to hold you accountable. And that's what I see the issue with a lot of these service companies is these technicians come in and they're smart. Like, they're street smart, and they're going to say, hey, I can get away with this. I can't get away with that. I'm going to slack here. I'm going to do this. And I've certainly been through those ups and downs, but where I saw our culture become the Tom Brady and the Bill Belichick way was when my leaders truly held the line on everything. And here's what I found is the lower end technicians that you're referring to that we don't really care to have, they weeded themselves out. And the people that stayed, they actually appreciated it because they want to be around other A players. Yeah. And I saw this. So we had a West Valley location. We had an East Valley office and a West Valley office. And I had this like, the West Valley office just suffered, right? Low retention or high retention on low retention, not very many technicians staking, right? The culture sucked. This guy said, hey, I'll go out there. And he improved it like 100%. And I thought it was great. And then I actually had to let that guy go. And I brought this other guy out there, and he started to outperform our East Valley location. And it was all because he went in there and he actually held the standard of what I wanted. And it wasn't like, because sometimes I was feeling like you, and it's like, man, just let that go. It's okay. And he was like, oh, just put a stake in the ground. It's like, hey, we're not late. We're, you know, we are premium. This is our dress standard. You can't come in here with a beard like that. Like, all the little things that, like, sometimes you let go because you're like, man, just keep the guy. He held that standard, and our culture changed. Our margins changed. Our retention for technicians, like, decreased, meaning our guys stayed around longer. And it was all because of the leader and holding that standard. And so people appreciate, like, people that are premium, people that actually care. And the people that don't, like, they're going to weed themselves out. And ultimately, what's funny, and this is why I've been stuck on A players lately, and a lot of it's been around because Tommy talks about it a lot. I'm like, what is he seeing in these A players that I'm not seeing? Like, how can he go afford a $250,000 base salary employee? And, like, I'm not seeing the importance of it. Well, it's because that $250,000 employee raises everyone else around him because he inspires them to want to be better. And so, like, that guy pays for himself over and over again. When you have a low performer, he drags everyone down. And we all know what that's like. Like, if you have a friend that smokes, you're five times more likely to become a smoker or whatever it might be, or overweight. The stats on, like, having an overweight buddy, like, you're pretty much screwed. Like, you're going to become overweight if you hang around that person. And business is no different with your leadership. So like, you need to be very careful with who you have leading your team. And it's a good way to look in the mirror and say, what type of leader am I being to my people?
That's good. And that changes the culture of the business just by, you know, holding the line on the standard. Yeah, that's cool. It just takes a little bit of time and belief, you know, and, okay, that's great. I'm going to make a hard pivot because I know we're already running short on time. This thing is like flying by already. and I have like a couple more questions. Yeah. I'm going to shift to not so much the business itself, but you and your experience, post transaction, right? So life after the sale, and I know you love to fly your, you know, the heli. Sorry you couldn't land. Rhino does not have a helipad. I suppose you could try. I don't think it's going to work out. It's not official. I'm not sure how you're going to get down out there. I think there's a hatch in there you could go get into. That would have been really cool though. But I want to talk about, you know, life after, you know, selling the business, because a lot of owners think, and I actually, Chad and I have talked about this, and Tommy, we think it's going to be a very active market again in 2026. In home services, in regards to people, you know, who are going to, you know, start considering, you know, having a transaction, selling their businesses. And you've been through it. You've been through this. And so, I always want to know, you know, when you think of like selling the business as like the finish line, like a lot of people think, you know, if they're like, okay, I'm going to sell it and I'm moving on and I'm done. Job well done. Pat myself on the back. That's not for everybody, but some people think that way. And don't want to go and build another green mango, right? Like they're done. And I don't know that that's how I will be able, what I'll be able to do. I think I'm enjoying like the investments and stuff like that and building the minimum. I mean, I brought on a private equity partner in 2023. I'm still here, right? Yeah. Doing the thing. But for those who like, you know, are thinking, you know, okay, I'm selling the business and I'm crossing the finish line. And you're able to do that. But like, what's life been like for you since then? Like, you look like you're living your best life. Like, you can do so much stuff with your kids and like your family. I love that you're doing all those things. I'm like, I'm very, very tight with my family and my kids and stuff like that. But like, tell me what's Cam's life now, like post this stuff. I mean, kind of give it to me on the personal and professional side both, because I'm assuming you're doing still something in there with those things. And you've got the 1%, you know, the 1% club thing that you're doing, but like, maybe just talk about those things.
Life after the exit is probably 10 times busier than before. And because I have so many more buckets. So it's like before you have one company and it's just like everything evolves around that one company. It's easy to delegate and whatever. I had a lot of freedom, but now it's like, I have my investment portfolio stuff that I'm doing. I have the family that I've always done, but that's like a high priority since I've exited. We have Coconut Cleaning, which is a cleaning company, but we've also franchised it. And that's starting to blow up. And then I have the 1% club. And so when I think about, like, when I look at my week, it's like, man, this is crazy, man. It's been fun, but like the biggest part about what I'm wanting to do. And, you know, my wife always laughs at me. I told her, I was like, hey, I'm going to take a year off. Like, it's been a year and like, I never like skipped a beat. And I just tell people like, hey, you can't go from like this crazy hunter that's always busy, like chasing the next thing, to just like sitting back and playing golf. And I love golf, but you crave that dopamine hit of doing more. And just, I feel like I have so much momentum behind me that it's like, it's just so easy to get involved in this. And because of like the 15 years of business knowledge that I have now, like, hey, put me into this role. Like, I'll go 10X this thing overnight. And so it's been fun to see, but I've gotten a lot of gratification on the 1% club. It's a consulting group, but also it's a community. I just see that need for people that are, you know, in the trenches alone. They're trying to build these companies and they don't have a business partner and they don't have a dad or they don't have a friend that has made their first million or whatever it might be. That's the biggest thing in entrepreneurship is belief. You just need to see and hang, like, I hang around Tommy and I love Tommy, and Tommy's, you know, worth probably over $1 billion now. Yeah. Tommy's no different or special than you or I. Right. Like, and I say that with all due respect, My buddy who made his first million, Rob Horn, it's the same thing. He gave me that belief that, hey, if my buddy, this dork Rob can do it, like, so can I. And we just need that belief factor. And so what I'm trying to inspire in this 1% club is that, hey, less than 1% of companies make over $10 million in revenue and are actually profitable. My goal is to help everyone become the 1%. And so we do that through community. We do that through playbook. So I give you all the things that I did to make me successful that were beneficial for me. Like, I just give it out for them. And it's a once a month call. And it's just been really fun. And it's happened. I think it's special because I didn't plan on going into that when I sold. It's just organically happened. And I think that's why it's so special. Coconut over here, like, we're going to do $250 million in revenue within the next couple of 3 to 4 years there. And it's like, the problem there is, like, I hope we don't grow too fast because have this amazing system process. Now it's just making sure we pick the right partners to franchise with. So between Coconut, between franchising, between my investments, and then the family, like, life's just crazy, but all the good problems, right? Yeah. So
do you know who Jeff Duden is?
Yeah.
You know Jeff? Oh, that's right.
So okay. Tommy and Jeff are going to come in on Coconut.
Are they? Yeah. Okay. So that does not surprise me. Jeff, so Homefront is a client of ours too. And so Jeff and I have become buddies. He came out to Rhino X earlier this year. And I remember him telling me, because we were talking with our roofing business. I'm like, hey, what would it look like if we turned into the franchise world? And he's like, blah, blah, blah. I was like, okay, maybe we'll steer clear of that one. Yeah. I see the benefit, you know, to it at scale, like, you know, but it's like when you start to deal with franchising, you're also dealing with, people who are, you know, don't really know how to run and scale these businesses. And they're hoping that the playbook just works itself, you know? But it's cool to have something like you, if you're putting, you know, you have your 1% thing and Chad's got his group too, like, where everybody kind of has their, you know, you just need to get into a place where you have, like, you can have the mentorship, you can get the belief created in you to do it, and the help if you get stuck on something, and you're going to get stuck on something. So I don't know, like, if I'm ever going to get past this dopamine hits too good, you know? And when you're in the thick of it and you're not getting it, you know, it's kind of like sales, yeah. You know, it's like when you're not selling anything, then you make your sale, boom, you're right back to the top of the mountain. I think that's just something that I don't know that when I'll get over that, and I don't want to right now.
That's my biggest fear for Tommy. Like, he, you know, he's like, oh, when I have a kid, I'm gonna slow down. It's like, dude, I don't see you being able to, like, you're just, no. I hope you can, but it's going to be tough. But
we were just at dinner on Friday night, and we went to this, like, little airplane place downtown, which you got to go to. It's called Carry On. It's like a little restaurant type thing. It's pretty cool, but it feels like you're inside an airplane, which is pretty neat. And we were talking about it. I was like, dude, Tommy, once you have a kid, dude, like, this, you're done. You're not going to be able to do this anymore, buddy. Between businesses and kids, like, this is over. So let's just enjoy it while it lasts. Yeah. And he's like, he's like, I just talked about my 3 and 4 year plan. I'm like, dude, you just said you had like a 1 year plan because then you're going to get married in 27. You're going to slow down. I'm like, this ain't going to happen, dude. Thankfully he's got a lot of help around him, but he's always going to be doing something,
which is cool. And he'll figure out how to navigate it. And that's, I think, the key to entrepreneurship and why I attribute a lot of my success to, you know, my success in life business coach, Mark Fournier, is like, he taught me how to obtain true happiness without having to buy the Lamborghini or having to buy the jet or whatever, you know? And so when I exited, like, my happiness didn't go up or down any. I was already living this amazing, fulfilled life because I had, you know, balance. And I know that's a kind of a hot topic right now in business. And there's times and seasons where you have to grind and you're going to be out of balance, and that's fine. But the sooner you can become in balance and understand, like, it is the family, it is the relationships that make you true happiness, that's when you start to win. And that's what's, like, been so beautiful, is like, now I'm chasing things for different reasons. Yep. And it's not because, oh, then I'll be happy when I get this.
Yeah. Makes total sense. But sometimes you don't know that until you actually go through it. Because we all have boxes we want to check, yep, that you think that are important to you. And it does start to shift and change. Yeah. Hey Chad, do you have a coach that you go to regularly for anything? Like, do you have a specific coach? I don't. And I guess I've got, like, mentors I reach out to, but do you have, like, an actual coach that works with you on a month, like a regular basis?
I don't.
Just me.
Something I've thought about here. Yeah. Yeah. Something I've definitely thought about here lately, because I feel like, you know, I feel like you go through, you know, kind of as you were talking, Cam, you go through, like, different seasons of life where different things are important to you. And then, like, you find something and then it's like, maybe not what you thought it was, or you find something that's maybe better than what you had before. So I think it's important. I mean, I have obviously a lot of, you know, friends that I go to for answers and bounce stuff off of and different things like that, but not a, like a formal coach, I wouldn't say.
I think that's where it's nice.
You guys are missing out there, man. Well, if you haven't, you need, and I'm not even plugging my guy. I think my guy's great, but there's just, and that's, it sounds like you have a community too. It's, there's just so much value, at least for me, is like having that person that's just like teaching me about, a fulfilled life.
I think what's interesting for us, and like, at least in our situation, is when I say like, we have this text group, you know, and it's, you know, Tommy and we, but, and we're all like do such a good job, both personally and professionally, of being there for each other and supporting and pushing, you know, and then not being like, yes, man, like saying, no, that's bullshit, you know, like,
right.
And that's really good for us. And we really tap into it. And there's like daily activity in that thing. Now there's also 80% of it that's totally just nothing. It's just, you know, stuff that would probably, you know, get us canceled. But other than that, it's all pretty, like 20% that's like really, really good.
Yeah.
But I've thought about this too. And I actually reached out to a gentleman who I've had on the podcast before, just about, this was like a weird conversation. And I said, hey, I need a coach. I don't know what it's called, cause I just want you to talk to me about like life.
Yeah.
And nothing to do with business. Now he has some skill, but I was like, anytime I watch him and him post his clips and stuff like that, I'm like, God, this dude gets me fired up. Like, and he's just talking about life. And so, I thought about just having that person, you know, and having him be, and he's like, kind of, well, what would you want? And I was like, I don't know what to tell you what I want. Like, I want more of these videos that you're posting, but just like talk that into me, like just talk to me like that, you know, like, but the point being is like, I think we, you know, when you go through, if you can be really challenged in business, I think, and not need a business coach. I need somebody to talk like to me about real life, you know? Yeah. And like, hey, now, like, let's don't forget about what matters most, you know?
Right.
And I'm not saying that you don't need a business coach. I'm just saying, you know, you don't always need that. Like right now, I feel like I probably need more of the
life.
Hey man. Yeah. Like, yeah, just keep pushing me. Yep. And these guys are good at those things too, but it's different. You know what I mean?
For sure.
So, you know, I would encourage, you know, anybody who needs a good mentor, you know, at least to get a mentor if you can't afford a coach. Like there's plenty of people out there that will help you.
Yeah,
for sure. We are an hour into this thing, an hour. So Chad, I know it's you know, almost to your bedtime over there in Indiana. It's getting close. Well, it's about 5 o'clock or so.
Yeah, no. A little after. Got to grab the kids here in a little bit.
Well, I'm gonna wrap it up. Okay, I'm gonna do something a little bit different though. Like I had these little this little lightning round, these little rapid fire questions. Okay, so we don't have to go too much into like any depth unless you want to. Are you prepared?
I'm ready.
Are you prepared?
I'm ready, bro.
Okay. All right, Chad. Are you prepared?
I am.
You look.
You guys look. You guys look like you are like telling a ghost story right now with the sun coming in there. It looks like. I was like, I looked up and I'm like, what are they doing? Did they turn off the lights? What's going on there?
It's winter in Phoenix. Okay. Or yeah. Fall.
It's getting dark. Oh,
look behind me. It's about dark. 5 o'clock.
What state are you in? Where are you at?
Indiana.
Indiana. Okay.
He's an Indianer. Okay. This first one's going to be a little different.
Okay.
If every business had a smell, what would success smell like?
Oh man. If every business had a smell,
I'm going to repeat it. So it gives you time to think about it. If every business had a smell, okay. If you're listening right now, maybe you know what that smell is. Every business had a smell. What would success smell like? I'm ashamed to admit what the first thing came to mind for me is, so I'm going to wait until you give your answer.
I think it like a clean environment, like fresh, which is like a pina colada, coconut, like at Coconut, we do a coconut enhancement in our cleaning products. So like when you walk in, like it smells like you're in Hawaii, like that clean, crisp sea breeze. That's what success would smell like to me.
Okay, so that's perfect because to each their own. My wife would tell you it's the smell of the Marriott, the Desert Ridge Marriott. Like when you walk in, they have like a certain scent. That would be what it is to her too. So I honestly was like, I said, oh, it smells like money. That's very shallow. That's very shallow of me, you know, but it was the first thing that came to mind. But then as I started like being a little bit more thoughtful, I was like, oh, that's what she would say. So then I felt like Anna was going to save me with her response, even though she didn't give it to me, but I know that would be it for her. Okay. Weird question. We're going to move on from that one. You can only keep one skill for life, Cam. Just one. Selling, recruiting, or system building. Which one?
Everything starts with sales, so it's got to be sales.
Okay, I wouldn't have thought you said that after you being a systems and process guy. But they're useless if you can't sell anything, right?
Everything starts with sales, man.
Okay.
Rhino plug, okay?
There you go. That's so good. Thank you. What's your go-to turn it around move on a shitty day?
Ideally, it's the ice bath. That always turns it around. But also... the thought process, like, so my coach talks about dark train, bright train, and what's great about this. And so, you know, what we look for is what we see. And so I could walk into this office and look for all the bad things and all the imperfections, or I can walk into it and say like, dude, this company's amazing. And your day's just like that. It happened the other day. We're planning on flying out to NASCAR. Okay. We just redid my entire helicopter. We repainted it. We redid the interior. My guy was supposed to finish 2 days before this NASCAR event. We had this huge day plan, right? A bunch of guys flying out there. We're literally able to land right in the middle of NASCAR, go have an amazing day. The guys are still working on the interior. And I was sitting there, like my whole family's there ready to go. And the guy's literally like, isn't done. And I'm starting to get a little frustrated. And I just had to pause and just be like, dude, I'm complaining about my helicopter getting redone, going to NASCAR. Like, what am I doing here? And it was just a good way to like understand perspective of just like, I'm just so blessed right now. And it doesn't matter where you're at. If you're alive, if your kids are healthy, if you're having a crappy day and you have no money, like you have healthy kids. Yeah. I got one buddy, his kid's in the hospital right now fighting for his life. Oh, like, imagine his day. Yeah. And even him, I'm sure he could find great things. But the point is that no matter what you're going through, if you can pause and understand this one principle that everything works out and look for what's great, not what's missing, it'll change your whole outcome in life.
Yep. Love that. Sometimes your worst day is someone else's dream.
Yep.
Yep. Great answer, by the way.
Thanks, man.
Jeez. And I got to, you still doing those helicopter interviews?
Yeah, man.
Were you doing that?
Yeah.
And it would never go. She would never go. Really? No, she's like, she's super, I'm totally fine with it.
Let's go.
I'm down for sure. You have to come to Anthem and pick me up though. Okay.
It's messed up, dude. The iPad does have you.
Thank you. Okay, so if you had to start over tomorrow with $5,000 in a pickup truck or whatever vehicle you choose, what service trade are you jumping into first? It's an existing one. You cannot pick any of your existing stuff.
Well, I've done everything in the home service besides HVAC. So
okay, yeah. Okay, never mind. Okay, it's not roofing. You've done roofing.
That's true. I guess roofing. That doesn't count, man. Roofers suck. I'm just kidding. One of my good buddies, a couple of good buddies own a roofing company. So
Chad and I own a roofing business.
What would I do? I mean,
we're contractors, of course.
Yeah.
We get up on the roof, you know, we know how to fix all the stuff. Yeah, we're pretty good at it.
Pretty good at it.
Yeah, real good at it.
When was the last time you were on a roof, man?
You know, it was 2 years ago in Mexico, and I was doing a home build for a family down there. So,
sales are slow. Last time I've been on a roof is 2 years ago. Just waiting on the next deal to pop.
I stay in my lane in the roofing business. I stay in the marketing world. Yeah. Smart. We're right there. Okay. Last question.
Yep.
What's the most underrated trait in great leaders that almost no one talks about?
I got it for you, man. I feel like you thought you were going to stump me on this one. I think the leader's ability to truly care about their people underneath them. No one ever 100%. Talks about that, but employees understand the leaders that truly care. And I think about my business partner, Evan, like he's special to me because he'll spend hours with you. I'm not great at it. And he's like, he brings that to the table and he like, when you leave, you know, he cares and he'll show up for you. And I think people can sense that in the leader.
I love that answer. That's a fantastic answer. I did try to stump you and you went right into a fantastic answer and even gave me a little goosebumps.
There we go, man.
That's how you know it's real. Well, dude, listen, I appreciate you making the journey over here, especially in the afternoon in Phoenix. It's going to suck going back, but it's a lot easier when you're just riding.
Yeah, nice.
Not too bad when you're just riding along, having a good time and the air conditioning in the back of your Sprinter van.
There we
is
go.
Is that what
man.
That thing is? Is that a Sprinter you guys are driving?
Sick, dude.
Yeah, good for you. Well, listen, I'm grateful that number one, that you took the time to come here, but you know, that we even getting to do it in the first place. Bro. Finally.
I know, we need to hang out.
Finally.
More.
And I know some of the guys who try to get me to come and play golf. I'm like, Chad knows. I'm not amazing at golf. But I am a good driver of the cart.
There we go. I'll take that. I need a driver out there.
If we can play best ball.
Let's do it. Okay.
I'm down. I can play best ball. No problem. Chad, I'm getting better though. I'm getting better.
Okay. You just gotta play more.
Everybody says. Yeah. I don't have time for that.
I know it is tough to squeeze in.
No, thanks for having me on, man. You guys are great. And honestly, it's amazing to see what you guys have built here. Creating an agency is not easy. So it's cool. And you guys are doing a lot of things right.
Thanks, man. I'll give you a little tour once you're done and get a chance to do that. But Chad, unless you got any closing words, man, I'm going to go ahead and close this out.
Oh, Dylan, thanks for being on, Cam. Nice to meet you. And congrats on all your success. And I'm sure there's more to come down the road. So congrats to you. And yeah, hopefully one day when I'm out there, we can meet. That'd be great.
Let's do it, man. Appreciate it. Nice to meet you.
That's what we'll do. Next time old Chatty P comes out, he always stays up at my place. We'll set up a little golf outing.
Yeah, hit me up, man.
Let's do it. Yep. All right. Well, to our listeners. Yeah, that's it. Oh, that's right. We gotta get him out to that. So that's what we'll do. I'll work on getting him squared away for Rhino X. Then we'll make it happen. All right, cool. Perfect. All right. Listen, I'm trying to get off here. Okay, I'm trying to get Chad out of here. He's got to go pick up little Pete. And to our listeners, listen. Hopefully, you found some inspiration in that. Hopefully, you found even something that you might be able to change in the business. Like maybe it's something as simple as focusing on you being a premium service and what does that really mean. And you know, maybe if you're having a culture issue, maybe you double check your standards because your lowest standard is the highest standard to some of the others. So you got to make sure you lift that standard of what you believe is, you know, what you want your business to be. So, but whatever it is, you don't got to do everything, but you got to do something. No 0 days.